2 you can't experience anywhere else. Paramount Pictures presents U2 Rattle and Hum. Rated PG-13. Some material may not be suitable for children under 13. Opens Friday, November 4th at theaters everywhere. See the movie that goes with the music.
You're listening to U2 live from Dublin, brought to you by Paramount Pictures and KROQ.
It's like a countdown to space.
This is Timothy White, live in Dublin with all four members of U2, and also a special guest, Dave Fanning, who's the leading rock and roll DJ in Ireland, and also the man who broke U2 in Dublin, and therefore Ireland, that's right, and therefore the world. Well, all scores will be settled tonight. Dave, why don't you speak to the band? Actually, during our break, Bono was making the point that there are a lot of enthusiasms explored on Rattle and Hum, and that pertain to rock and roll history and to heroes and favorites of the band and people they discovered in the last little bit touring during the Joshua Tree tour. And there's a curiosity there, but it's not a wide-eyed one. It's a focused one. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, then what about, I mean, if just to throw a question directly to the band, what about looking back to all those pieces of music which you didn't really grow up with? I mean, if you two have the influence of, say, hunky-dory, Roxy music, that's sort of early 72, and in fact, Larry would say he even has things like the Sweet and the more sort of bubblegum side of it.
Thank you, David.
Hold on, and then if it goes up to 77 and the punk thing and that, what is it about all this music? I mean, could I go back as far as Slane, Bono, if I directed this one to you, and you met Bob Dylan there, and he was able to tell you more about things like the Clancy Brothers and Irish tradition of music than you knew yourself. And I think you got a bit embarrassed about that, did you?
Embarrassed, but I wanted to be embarrassed. I mean, I wouldn't ask the question if I didn't want an answer. You know, I was curious. Our music came out of nowhere, really, just out of the four heads, and you know, we listened to a lot of people like Patti Smith and a really great guitar player like Tom Verlaine was an influence on Edge, but essentially we didn't have many influences. And I often wondered what it would be like to have some. And so we began looking back. I mean, we used to turn the dial as we traveled through America, and we got into American music. We were also interested in Irish music, but it just didn't feel right for us to explore it at that point. And so we followed... We followed our noses into 50s rock and roll and Buddy Holly, Sun Studios, looking to black music. Like, you just have to walk past Alan Clayton's hotel room door and you just hear the reggae man just pounding out. And he's always been the sort of being into black music, and the rest of us just fell for it recently. Yeah, Edge was into Black Sabbath there. Well, Adam was into black music.
It's a funny thing, you know, from my perspective, in talking, say, to Bob Marley, one of his biggest heroes was Ricky Nelson. He was crazy for Ricky Nelson when he was growing up, and hearing him when the weather conditions permitted on Miami radio stations, you know, WINZ and that kind of thing.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I will say that Bob Marley was a big influence on you too, and in fact, particularly the way his relationship with Jamaica and Jamaican music. You know, just the way he felt about his country. He was very proud of where he came from, and we're also very proud of where we come from Ireland. And you know, we've not tried to pretend we're American or English. Or he used to be very unhip to be Irish and be in a rock and roll band. Things have changed. We're very glad of that.
Well, we should listen now to a song, the first single from Rattle and Hum. It was cut at the small STS Studios right here in Dublin, and it's called Desire. That's Desire. Irish Bo Diddley from U2's Rattle and Hum, and we're live. All four members, Timothy White speaking, and guest Dave Fanning from RTE Radio. We've been talking about that kind of cross-cultural process that rock and roll can often be, you know, travel informs it, all sorts of different things. And I'm thinking right now of, I still haven't found what I'm looking for, the version that's on Rattle and Hum, there's a gospel group there, and they had their own version of the song that they sent to you, I think, at least a demo version of it, Edge?
Yeah, we got a cassette of the gospel choir singing the song through Island Records. And they did it a lot better than we did, since it was a gospel song anyway. And when we went to New York, we thought we'd look them up and see what they were doing and maybe get them to come down and sing at the show.
Gospel music is really the most rebellious music because it's the most abandoned. People, they think about it less. They just sing, and they sing from somewhere down there, and it just comes out. I will thank Bruce Springsteen. He passed me, a brilliant gospel tape a few years back. He said, "Listen to that. That's real rock and roll," and he was right. I never thought about gospel music in that way. I always thought of white, soppy, "Give me your money and I'll make you cry" type singers that you'd hear. But the real gospel music is very radical and very close to rock and roll. And rock and roll was born out of gospel music and blues, as every American knows.
It's also a music which doesn't feel it has to adhere to a particular format, and therefore it can be incredibly innovative and like the Staple Singers. They, as a group, their sound, what they do musically, is so outrageous.
Right. Mm. There's a lot of rock and roll in there. There's a lot of emotional license, in the sense that they let the spirit take them. And I think there's always an interesting difference in people's perceptions of gospel as being spiritual music, from the heart, no holds barred, or religious. The best gospel, it's open-ended. There isn't any religious dogma in it, per se. It invites everyone in. I also find it interesting that U2 records sometimes turn up on the spiritual music charts in the States. Well, did you find that intriguing when that occurred? Or?
Yeah, we're starting our own religion, Tim.
There's more money in religion.
Be careful.
Oh, sorry. I do. Who doesn't have the sense of humor? Who should I be careful of?
How many stations was it?
Sorry, vote for The Edge. Worship Larry, whatever you like.
Well, we should listen now to this live version, which I think is a nice kind of intro lock of the new Voice of Freedom, their kind of vocal arrangement, and your arrangement as well. So
there's a very cool guy who arranges the new Voice of Freedom called Dennis Bell, and we should thank him because he kind of put this together, and it's something to behold.
I still haven't found what I'm looking for. You too, live from Rattle and Hum. I still haven't found what I'm looking for. You too, live from Madison Square Garden, September 1987, with the new Voices of Freedom. This is Dublin, Timothy White talking with U2 Live. We'll be back in a few moments. Stick with us.
I'm Timothy White, and we're with U2 live in Dublin on the Westwood One Radio Network.
Hi, this is Timothy White, live from Dublin with all four members of U2 and Dave Fanning from RTE Radio in Dublin. And we're kicking around Rattle and Hum and everything that informed it, both from the live standpoint and from the studio standpoint. And we've all decided, let's talk for a while. Let's kick some issues around and, not necessarily go from song to a bit of talk and then to a song. I know, Bono, one thing you were saying during the last commercial is that there's a lot more going on Rattle and Hum than just the process of being a fan, than a mere, say, responsive thing. It's a... there's a lot more subtleties going on.
I do think it's good being a fan. I think it's... there are not too many people we're fans of, but, if the Beatles, hear our version of Helter Skelter, they'd prefer we weren't a fan. But that's what's brilliant about it, is that it's so loose, it's so untogether.
Let's play tennis here. I mean, at the end of the day, we're not going to bullshit you. We get up on stage and we play some of those songs.
Right.
And it's about playing those songs on that night, whether or not you've rehearsed the thing. Rock and roll is something that's kind of passed on from one person to another through a few chords hummed. And that's Watchtower, that's Helter Skelter. And that's what we were trying to do with this record. And, you can look at individual songs and all that kind of stuff, and you can get into the heavy message, but at the end of the day, it's about having fun and getting up there and taking the risk.
And so the idea was to document some of those enthusiasms. You play these songs at sound checks, you hear them and respond to them anyhow. You hear them and want to learn them for the sheer fun of playing them once again.
Well, for years we were unable to play anyone else's songs, and I suppose finally we got it together to be able to play the likes of Watchtower. And
Only just. We wanted to make a noisy record and a sloppy record, and You're inspired by the likes of Exile on Main Street. It's a great Rolling Stone record. It's probably my favorite record by the Rolling Stones. Because we wanted to fight against the way music is becoming, which is so very slick and so very polished. And
it's done a lot from the producer's perspective, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, well, the producer is the artist in the 80s, but not with U2.
See, I always thought one of the great things about U2 is that they're allowed to grow up in public, you know, go through that process of literally playing at, you know, at your level of ability as time went on. I mean, Edge, your guitar sound was so unique because you had to reinvent the instrument for your own, you know, nuts and bolts understanding of it. I mean, would you agree?
I think also early on, you know, as musicians, we were still at a very early stage in our development, and we lent very heavily on one another. And so my style is as much a product of Larry's drumming style and Adam's bass style and Bono's singing style. We just, that's the way it came together. That's the thing about a real band, is that they have a sound. So, I mean, a lot of people have highlighted the guitar, but I think Adam and Larry have styles which are equally unique.
Right.
Just that I suppose mine was the most high profile in the group.
Well, Larry,
check
actually,
in the post.
Well, Larry, you were the most accomplished musician technically when the band was getting started. So, what would your perspective on it be?
On what?
I mean, you know, just the evolution of the band from record to record, from album to album.
Oh, that's a difficult.
The problem.
This is very complicated.
From a standpoint of surprise. A track that happened in terms of, you know, forces coming together. Come on.
I think that's one for Dave.
No, look, I'm in first gear. I'm working my way up. That's very complicated. So I'd like to pass it on to my good friend Adam.
Well, I tell you, the question was so long, I've bleeding forgotten it.
Garolitis.
We'll chop it up.
Okay, what were we talking about? Hard work.
Talking about being in a real band.
Darwin's Evolution Scale, man.
What's a song you got a kick out of because you made it up in the studio? You made it up as you were going along, and it's like, whoa.
That's every
great
song.
Great song.
I think Drowning Man was one of those songs. It was one of those songs where we didn't really know what we were doing, but every time another member of the band heard it, it got 100% better. And, you know, that's what it's about. It's starting out with an idea that someone else feels and takes somewhere else.
Yeah, so one thing builds on another.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, some of the songs work like that. It sort of, somebody has an idea, somebody else has an idea, and sort of you throw it together, you knock away, and it's sort of a block. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. What we find now is that way of working is a long, drawn-out way, and sometimes it's easier to actually sit down and to structure the songs. There are different ways to songwrite, but certainly early on, the idea of actually going into a room and sitting down and actually just throwing things together, just throwing crap against the wall, I suppose, and we'll see how it's stuck, you know?
Yeah, it just came out of improvisation. We didn't really know what we were doing. We know a little more about what we're doing, but we're still not very expert. And I think, you know, one of the reasons why we're a good live band is because we can't really believe that we're even together when we're up there. We get, you know, it's such a struggle for us to play music that we have to keep concentrated. Maybe it's easier for other bands. Maybe that's why they're so boring, because they're bored.
But Bono, Adam just mentioned Drowning Man earlier on, which is on the War album. Now, the album before that was October, which is one you really didn't have a lot of time for. I mean, most people's first albums, it's 3 or 4 years of songwriting, and it's very easy to get that one out in some ways. The second album was a real quickie, and a lot of that you did in the studio. That was the October album. Mm-hmm. Now, by the time of Drowning Man, if you have a song like that and you want to try and get it together, up to, say, Hawk Moon 269, or one of the better songs on the new album, I mean, do you feel so much more confident that you don't mind in terms of the approach you have to make and the mistakes you might make?
We're actually a very unconfident group in many respects. I think one of the reasons why we do appear arrogant at times is because it comes from that sort of sense of, you know, sort of fuck off world, you know? It's like we're very up against the wall. We feel very up against the wall. We can't really, we're just getting to grips with, you know, I'm just getting to grips with singing and with playing the instruments. We still don't feel very confident about our playing, but we don't care as much about what other people think these days. So in the end, the songs on Rattling Home just, they seem to roll off a bit easier. But that's, it's more just because we're, you know, we're letting people in, we're getting a little bit more confidence to let people see our other side, to see our amateurish side. And that's why All Along the Watchtower is on there. We just learned that 5 minutes before we played it. But I suppose the other side of U2 is Hawkmoon. And I'd like to say that, I mean, I called it Hawkmoon 269 because it seems to me, well, it's a reference to a few people. One of my favorite writers, Sam Shepard, but also to, it's a motel room in my imagination somewhere. But the 269 actually isn't a motel room number. It's the fact that we mixed it 269 times before we got it right. And so we're that professional, man. But I think it's probably the greatest rock and roll we've recorded. The most abandoned, anyway.
Well, let's listen to the 269th mix of Hawk Moon. Hawk Moon 269 from U2's Rattle and Hum album. I'm Timothy White, live in Dublin with all four members of U2 and Dave Fanning, DJ for RTE in Dublin. Gentlemen, I'd like to read a quote that I just sort of happened upon in the last couple of days in preparing for the show. And we were talking during the song about happy accidents. And let me read this. It's a lyric fragment from one of Ireland's greatest songwriters. And it goes, all softly playing, with head to the music bent, and fingers string upon an instrument. It was written by James Joyce. It's from a series of poems called Chamber Music. And it's funny, when I came upon the quote, I had the Rattle and Hum jacket in my hands, and I thought, it's such a great description of Edge on the cover. And those kinds of accidents, you know, all sorts of, you know, funny little coincidences and things have so much to do with what U2 means in terms of cross-cultural things. And, well, let's start off, Bono. You were talking about immigration, and let's move in through there.
Was I? yes, I was. Because you're talking about Van Diemen's Land.
That's true.
And even though it's a song about going to Australia, we... bent the meaning a little bit. Over to Edge.
On Van Diemen's Land.
Yeah, well, talk about it.
Yeah, that song. I mean, it is a great song. I never thought it would make a U2 record because originally it was just music for a while, and then one night in the west of Ireland, I started writing down some words, and it took shape, and it really was based around coming upon the monument to the birthplace of John Boyle O'Reilly, this Irish poet.
That was in County Meath?
Yeah, just about 25 miles north of Dublin. I'd never heard of the guy, but I was just walking away when I noticed in the window of what obviously was some kind of ticket office when this place was open to the public many years ago, this faded brown newspaper clipping of his life. And what basically happened to him was he was a Fenian and a man who believed in freedom for his country and was sent away for expressing that in poetry to this place, Van Diemen's Land.
In Australia.
But that theme of immigration, of the Irish artist leaving the country has been something that, you know, we as a band have felt at times, and we've seen so many other artists leaving Ireland. It's something that is very universal.
The very difference is just that we had a choice. We actually chose to go to America, to go to Europe, to go to Australia, and to come back. A lot of our contemporaries don't have that choice. They don't want to leave, but they have to leave just to find work.
In terms of him being that way, by the way, just incidentally, do you see him in some ways as sort of like a prisoner of conscience? Like, for instance, if you go back to the Conspiracy of Hope tour, I mean, in the same way, he's just like anybody that you sort of sang for in 1986 in those 6 dates in America.
Well, he was not a man of violence, and in that respect, all he was doing really was expressing his own particular conscience, and so in that respect, yeah, I would. That's the way I would have seen his story.
It's also funny too because he wound up in Boston, my home, as a journalist. he escaped from Australia, from exile.
God bless
you
know? Him.
Yeah, and that's on the next record.
And he's stuck in the face.
Part two.
The song continues.
Yeah.
And one of John Boyle O'Reilly's biggest books in the States was a book called Songs, Legends, and Ballads. So let's listen now to Edge singing Van Diemen's Land from U2, Rattle and Hum. That's Van Diemen's Land, Edge doing the vocals, from U2's Rattle and Hum. I'm Timothy White, and we're in Dublin with all four members of U2 and with Dave Fanning of RTE Radio. Stick with us. We're live. We'll be back in a few minutes with more talk.